When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
You are listening to Waiting on Reparations, a production of iHeartRadio. It's Waiting on Reparations. Hey, now this is a story all about how Knife came up with a new lifestyle. Walking out the store with a few white owls, like surf's up, dude, and then you wipe out. All started at age 6 when I came to hate this makeshift matrix. Talking about fake shit, interested in words, and I started to play with. Took it from the journal and out to the pavement. Bulletproof, ain't no hurt in the G. By myself, cause Mariah on maternity leave. And I turn it hot, make it to a certain degree. Eat rappers like I'm eating up a burger with cheese, dope. Hey, what's going on? This is Dope Knife, and you are listening to Waiting on Reparations. Man, it feels weird. I wanted to stop for a second and let Mariah say, and Lingua Franca, and then we would say the, you know how it goes. But today I am by myself, at least for this beginning of the episode. Mariah is on her leave. The baby hasn't come yet, but we're waiting, but she's officially on her break. So it is just going to be me rapping on this one and opening it up for you. Got another banger of an episode coming up. It's going to be an interview that Mariah did with Robin Wunsley Worlebaugh, who is a Democratic socialist that's running for Minneapolis City Council. They're going to be talking about their journey to get into this point of running for office, police brutality, rent control, a bunch of cool shit coming up. But let's see, what do I want to talk about with you guys today before we get there? Oh, New York rapper Ka, that's K-A if you guys haven't heard of him, from Brownsville. I've been a huge fan of his for at least 8 years now, and he put out a couple albums that I really dug. But he just put out a new joint called The Martyr's Reward that, oh my.
Pretty critical. Many in the rest could attest to what we endure living through, either with a belt or a bullet. That's how I was taught things. It's on every summer if wondering why I ain't want no offspring.
I mean, we don't usually, you know, outright, like, recommend stuff on this show, more or less just say what we think is dope, you know, pertaining on the topic that we're talking about music in. But this album, I gotta give it up, and I gotta use my little bit of a platform to big up this album, The Martyr's Reward by Ka. If you are in the mood for some, like, lyrical, thoughtful hip-hop, you know, I mean, to be honest with you, this shit is like, it's like the hip-hop equivalent of reading a novel is how I would describe Ka's music in this album in particular. It's like the way he uses prose and stuff is just It's nuts, but highly recommended. That's what I'm listening to. I've had that shit on repeat. So y'all need to check that shit out. What else is interesting? Oh, Candace Owens, the right-wing conservative pundit. Apparently she's being sued by a fellow black right-winger for $20 million for saying that they're a strip club madam. So that's that story. You know what? Let's not even waste any more time. We're going to be right back with that interview for you right after the break.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This week, I have the distinct honor of being joined by Robin Wonsi-Woloba, a Democratic Socialist running to be Minneapolis' first Black Socialist councilperson to represent Ward 2. She is a Chicago native, a community activist, a labor organizer, and from what I can tell, an all-around really dope person. So Robin, thank you so much for joining us today. Yes. How are you? What's good?
Yes, thanks so much for having me, Mariah. Like, I'm so glad to be able to also support like powerful Black fans who are doing great things like yourself. So like Queens Unite, I'm so excited to be here and just talk about this. I would say like history making campaign that we're running over here in Minneapolis.
Yeah. So you, you know, I've looked at your platform extensively. There's a lot of exciting stuff on it, but for you, what, actually, no, let me take a step back. I'm so excited to talk about politics and a huge policy nerd. I'm like, yes, let's go. But let's learn a little about who you are as a person, because I'm sure your experiences working to radically transform our, you know, the prison industrial complex, working with education, these backgrounds very much inform the policy that we're going to talk about in a little bit. So tell us a little bit how you got here. So you came from Chicago, you're in Minneapolis now. What led you to this moment of running for Minneapolis City Council?
Yeah, I would definitely say, you know, coming from Chicago and actually coming to Minneapolis thinking like this is going to be, you know, my liberal refuge from like life is hard over in Chicago. So I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to give me a good job because that's how Minneapolis is market. You know, my housing is going to be for the low. We're just going to live our best lives. And then literally within a year of being here, Jamar Clark was murdered by Minneapolis police in 2015. And for me, it was like, whoa, okay, so the same stuff that's happening in my hometown and literally everywhere else, that happens here. And what really moved me to like start joining like some of the frontline struggles was really our own BLM chapter that really like came into fruition in the midst of that high profile murder of Jamar. I mean, these folks, we're talking about Black working class folks literally holding space, occupying the 4th Precinct Police Station. You know, literally seeing the things that it's become norm now, like withstanding like tear gas and rubber bullets, like just all out attacks from not only the police themselves for just simply saying you can't kill us, and nor will you continue to just enact violence on us and just, you know, continue to live your lives while we carry on the suffering and the trauma from those experiences. They not only got attacked from that, but they also got attacked from the Democratic establishment. Like every progressive of all the colors came out and was like, nah, y'all need to stop doing this. This is not the way in which we get change, which is completely false. And I think for me, it was like a wake up call. In that moment, I immediately like joined the front lines with Black working class people and trying to get justice for Jamar Clark. And that segued into me joining our workers' rights struggle that was also happening at the same time, which was leading a 15 minimum wage fight. And I already know, like coming from Southside Chicago, heavily policed communities are also historically divested communities. And those are the areas where we do not have, you know, investments in quality jobs or livable wage jobs. So for me, it's like, it's a no-brainer. Like, we need to make sure working class people have more money in their pockets. And any effort that is trying to transfer, you know, power, I mean, not power, but wealth from the hands of, like, the minority 1% and back into the pockets of working class people, like, I'm down for. So immediately joining those efforts and then seeing the Democratic establishment once again go through every tactic and blockage that they could throw at us to make sure that not only your communities remain over police, but we are also not going to provide you with the solutions, like more wages, to make your life better in this city. We want you to continue to suffer. And I think the seeds were planted for me at that time where we got to start building our own independent political power in this city, or folks are going to continuously get killed. And unfortunately, Jamar Clark was not the last. And unfortunately, even George Floyd after last year, he was not the last. We've continued to have these. And people are still struggling. Joblessness rates are still going up. We have growing tent encampments across the city. We have a serious opioid crisis that's also interwoven into all these other crises that we're experiencing. And it's very clear we need new leadership. And not only new leadership, but people who understand that the system we're up against is racial capitalism that wants working class people to struggle, that wants Black people to just be bearers of state violence and not say nothing, go to work and be happy that you got a job that pays you pennies. And it's just like, no, we're done with that.
We're done with that. Exactly. Yeah. So you've touched on so many different issues and the ways that they intersect, from police brutality to homelessness, to opioid crisis, economic justice. So what would you say is the number one priority for you when you get in office? When is your election, first of all?
Election is November 2nd.
Okay, yes. So we don't have much time.
We don't. It's first time.
So when you get in there, you win the election in November, you get sworn in, what, like January, something like that?
Yeah.
So Robin's in there January 1st. What's going down on the city council, first thing first?
Biggest thing is public safety. That is the fight of this race. And it's a fight on both sides. We have a candidates and a mayor and corporate driven lobbying forces that are literally launching a forceful campaign that says we need to support the police more than ever. We need to be making sure that we're fully funding the department. So literally retaliating against the demands of last year's, you know, historic global uprising that took place in the wake of George Floyd's murder. And we have candidates like myself who are running on, you know, continuing that movement that we experienced, where it's like, no, we need to not continuing, you know, this investment into institutions that kill us, that does not abide in our collective well-being. We need to start investing in housing, because housing is public safety. We need to be investing into public schools, because public schools and education is public safety. We need to make sure we're really bringing about a Green New Deal, because clean air, clean water, that is public safety. And those are all the things that working class people need. And that's the things that we want to emphasize when we're elected. Like, public safety is not isolated to policing. We need to be making mass social investments through a tax on the rich, to fund the actual solutions, the preventative, you know, solutions that makes our community safe, that allows working class people to have a quality of life. And one of the ways in which we're going to do that is one of the big things that's happening in Minneapolis in this election, where working class people will likely have a vote on, is passing Yes for Minneapolis, which is one of the campaigns that came out of, you know, last year's movement to really divest from the police and move those resources towards other, you know, departments and services that keeps our community safe. So that will be voted on November 2nd. And if that passes, then I, along with my colleagues, will have the very serious task of fighting for an ordinance that makes sure that department does not just propagate the status quo of policing that we know does not work and that continues to harm Black people and brown people and poor folks. And if folks want to check out what our vision is for public safety, we have a lot more thoughts of that, like making sure we're fully funding 311. We're expanding an unarmed workforce. We're demilitarizing this department so people can't shoot people with tear gas. Because why? Why? Like why? It's not that serious, bro. And making sure that we're also having a democratic oversight structure over this new department. So we just released our own comprehensive public safety plan that we plan to fight for regardless of what happens with Yes for Minneapolis. When we're elected, like that first 100 days of like, this is how we make sure we have a public safety system that doesn't, you know, support a apartheid structure of our city where Black people get policed and killed and rich people get safety and wellness calls when grown people look like they're in their neighborhood. Like, no, we're ending that.
I feel that, yeah. I mean, like, public safety encompasses so much. It can be hard to, like, pull the threads out with regards to a concrete starting point. Like, because you have to deal with it comprehensively. And so to say, oh, we just gonna, like, focus on the housing. Oh, we just gonna focus on the environmental health and well-being of our communities, etc. It's like, nah, it's like, it's everything together.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, I feel that. I'd love to hear more about this this wealth tax that you're interested in implementing. So tell us a little bit about how that would work and what you want to accomplish with it. Like, what you want to get done when that comes to fruition.
Yes. I mean, when it comes to public safety, like when we're talking about like making these mass social investments, we know it's going to take revenue. And of course, like the revenue is there. What we're heard or told time and time again is that, no, we can't prioritize housing. We can't prioritize public housing. We can't prioritize like actually hiring unarmed public safety workers because we ain't got the money. No, you got the money. You just want to use that to direct more subsidies to corporate developers who are displacing working class residents and renters from their communities. You want to continue to give TIFs to Target, which is out here stealing their workers' wages every single day. Like, no, we got the money. You just rather like subsidize corporate and profit driven businesses in our cities. That's where you want to direct that money towards. And we're like, no, you need to run those coins back. And the way that we know that's got to happen is through either taxation, which we know there is some state preemptions on it.
But fees, I was wondering about that. Yeah.
Yes. But fees. And this is the thing with like being a public servant. You need to be creative. Like, yeah. I mean, even right now, rent control, which is also going to be voted on too, and which we're supporting. They told us four years ago, you can't do rent control. The state preempts that. It's like, guess what? We could do a charter amendment. That's how we also got the 15 minimum wage that we successfully fought for in 2017. We heard the same arguments. You can't do this. The state prevents this. Big business said this is illegal. It's like, surprise, surprise. Let's search through our toolkit of things to do to make change happen. Like, and we can get this done. So one of the things that we can do to start to, you know, fight back against our extractive economy is to leverage fees on these corporate interests. We're talking about passing an Airbnb tax, like what I mentioned earlier. We have tent encampments that are growing by the day. It absolutely makes no sense why we have luxury, like, apartments in our communities that are sitting vacant because the landlords want to lease it out as an Airbnb. No, you need to be penalized for that. Like, somebody needs to be in that apartment. And if you're not going to make that happen, trust me, you're not about to make no profit off of basically supporting a housing crisis in our city. We can leverage fees on businesses like what Seattle did. Seattle got creative and said, let's do a head tax for all the employees of Amazon, because that's the big, you know, business over there. And we can use that revenue to create city-owned social housing. And that was going to bring in $240 million every year. We can look at doing the same thing. Target is one of the largest and most respected, you know, corporations in our city. And as I also mentioned, are often one of the biggest culprits of wage theft. Let's start leveraging taxes on them. Like, they don't often pay property taxes. We need to say, no, you need to start doing that. So there's a number of tools that we can use. Mansion taxes. Why are we selling mansions at a housing crisis? Like, no, you need to run that money back. And then we can use that revenue to actually support, like, funding our collective needs, our social infrastructures. So there's a number of ways in which we can look at just through fees or levies of how we can start to reverse the effects of trickle down economics, because none of that money trickles down to our communities. We need to start actually taking hold of that wealth and redirecting it back into the pockets of working class people.
We will be back with Robin right after the jump.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency, where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
I think, a lot of the funds that could be generated through levies and fees, as you're describing, could be put into, you know, like social housing and things like that. But one thing that interested me about your platform is in the discussion of housing, you touched on the tent cities and the Airbnbs and stuff. What seemed to me to be like an inclusionary zoning policy of like new developments and certain amount of affordable housing. And then I wondered if you could talk to us a little bit more about your vision, if any, for working with private developers to ensure that with regards to housing in particular, you know, we're actually getting housing for the people.
So I think for sure the first step is we need to pass a strong rent control policy. Like, the fact right now, Minneapolis passed a 2040 plan that authorized the creation of thousands of new housing units under multi like apartment complexes that, again, are largely cost burden housing, meaning whoever move in there, likely your 30% of your annual income is going to go towards rent alone in that unit. So we need to be placing a cap on those rents right now to make sure, you know, folks are not having to choose between, I don't know, cooking, buying groceries, or rent. So we're supporting rent control. One of the other measures that we're talking about is the city has the ability to buy back some of those units and put those in a land trust. put those in our public housing portfolio. Like, start getting those back off of the private market. And also, another big thing that we're talking about doing is right now, the rent of our housing or the market rate housing is determined through an average median income. And that average median income right now is based off of like 80% of the average income for the metro residents, like metro wide. It's not looking at Minneapolis specific. And that's largely why they will say a one bedroom apartment at, you know, $1,500, that's totally reasonable. It's not. We need to be reducing that. It's the acronym is AMI. We're talking about reducing that to 30% or at minimum 50% of Minneapolis average income. I mean, median income, because then we can see those rents going back down to like, okay, $1,100 for a one bedroom, $900 for a one bedroom. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not giving this a wide threshold, which is largely profits for the corporate developers who are building this housing and overseeing it. So we're talking about reining back in the AMI. But again, you got to couple that with rent control. We also, again, need to be buying back units, getting those units that are now being used for Airbnbs. We need to be putting those into city-owned land trusts. Adding those to our public housing portfolio, because we've privatized so much of it so far. And then using that revenue, again, through taxing some of these corporate developers and the rich to actually start constructing our own city-owned housing. Where, again, that basis, we could say 30% AMI. Like, if we want to charge $500 for a studio or $800 for a one-bedroom, we can do that because it's city-owned.
Mm-hmm.
That's the future that I'm invested in, because clearly the private market will never meet that needs. It clearly it's not doing it now. People are literally living in tents year round, and I don't know if you've ever been to Minneapolis or your listeners.
I have, yeah. I played a show somewhere in Minneapolis many years ago.
Was it during the winter?
No. Oh hell no. Nah.
Exactly.
Nah, I'm from the South, baby. Nah.
It's cold. It's cold as hell.
Nah, y'all can keep that.
It's cold. People are literally living outside in a tundra in a tent, and we literally have units just sitting empty. That's a problem. We need to be like running that back into city owned and democratically owned cooperatives or land trusts. Like, no, it cannot. We cannot keep relying on the private housing market because it's failing us.
Yeah. Period.
Yep.
So a little bit of time we got left. Like, what is your coalition, your governing coalition look like, ideally? Because, you know, you can have, I got in 2018. I was the only person of color, 20 years younger than everybody else. Mm. Only socialist abolitionist in that bitch. And, like, it was like, oh, I gotta get shit done now, or try to, with these, like, old-ass white people that, like, will not even make eye contact with me. And so I'm always very curious when I interview candidates or talk to candidates, you know, in different municipalities, like what your ideal governing coalition looks like, what it's looking to probably shake out like, and how that's going to impact the way you move within the space of city council.
Yeah, we're super excited about this because our team was just talking about this. We're about to release our community commitment plan of how we're going to do that, of build a co-governance structure with working class people, you know, driving it. And one of the biggest things that we're saying, like, to hold the core of it, we need to create a community office right in our ward. Right now, all of the offices are out in City Hall in downtown Minneapolis, where the lobbyists and U.S. Bank can get to your elected leader and basically tell them, yo, I need you to sell out working class people in this way. If you're going to ask us to sell out working class people, we need you to come to where the people are. So we're going to have a community office, and city council gets paid pretty well. So all of my staff has agreed to, or will agree to, using a portion of our money, our salaries, to not only fund this office, but to also fund staff to do the coordinating work of building our grassroots coalition, which will definitely include, you know, unions. My ward is also home to the largest student community in the city because we have two large universities. So we need to make sure we're having a student, representation. And we're actually going to put together a student group on campus so that we're making sure we're meeting with them continuously. But that coalition is also going to include renters, because again, my ward is majority renters, as well as that's the demographic of the city. Mm-hmm. We're going to also have healthcare workers, because that's a particular need right now. We're literally closing down hospitals, and we know we're entering into another peak of like the Delta variant. It makes no sense. But that coalition will also include small business owners. And I'm literally talking about small businesses and micro businesses, not the 200,000 employees that like to pretend that they are and actually help close down small businesses. Mm-hmm. So we're literally talking about what that structure looks like right now. We're really excited of like, how do we hold people's assemblies? Like, you know, organizing committees using a precinct captain strategy that we're using now for our field operations, so that it's actually working class people who are continuously having conversations around our platform and how we're advancing it together right on their blocks. Because it's going to have to take that hyper-localized, like, organizing to drive this forward. And another big piece of our community kind of engagement strategy is also participatory budgeting, because city council here has oversight over the budget, and they hardly fight for mass investments into anything. So this is an opportunity where we can actually work with the coalitions of stakeholder groups that I described to actually build a robust budget that, again, shifts the wealth that we generate for big business back into our hands and back into our needs. So we're really excited to use that as a tool. But yes, we're going to be releasing that, because that's what we dream of. Like, that's what we're practicing now, like how to have working class people really drive their, like building their own political independence.
Amazing. Well, tell us where we can keep in touch with you, where we can donate, where we can learn more about your work.
Love the coins. Yes, you can follow us on all social media channels at Robin for Minneapolis. Either it's going to be Robin FORMPLS or Robin number 4MPLS. But we are going to we are on all the social media channels. Actually, we got a TikTok, so even come see us over there. I know. Look at that. We're trying to be real millennial status. But we're on Facebook, social media, Instagram, Twitter. And then we have our website, Robin, FORMPLS. That's where you also can find our podcast, because we're connecting with community leaders in Minneapolis to show how movements are very active and strong around a number of issues. So we have our podcast there. That's how you can find out how to support door knocks, phone banks. And this is from wherever you're at. Like, you can come down and visit us, or we can find a way to get you somebody's phone bank sheet. But we're going to make space for you. And you can also find our donation link up on our website. We appreciate all the coins. So far, we've been able to raise over $60,000 just on just grassroots, like working class people.
Okay.
Our average donation is $30. And it's just like, So we appreciate every dollar. And it's going towards really building a political revolution here in Minneapolis. Please share our social media, share our polls, share the articles. We've written a number, I think, of powerful articles that lays out political analysis of what we're dealing with here in Minneapolis and how it connects to the nationwide fight for justice and a new mandate on public safety. So you can find all that on our website too. Let folks know, you know, the political revolution, the movement is not dead here in Minneapolis, and our campaign is running on it. We are the extension of it. And we plan to win come November and continue to bring those demands that was inspired by George Floyd into fruition and fight unapologetically alongside working class people to make every one of those demands happen, because we deserve it and we ain't got no choice.
It's a beautiful thing. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yes.
Hopefully we'll have you back when you're in office. You can let us know how it's going and everything.
Can't wait. Yes.
And that is our episode for this week. Want to give a massive shout out to Robin for taking the time to talk with Mariah. That was some dope shit. And we are wishing them well in their quest to take office. I don't really have too much to add to it, except for, you know, what I do. I'm a rapping ass dude. You know, hey, Joel, can you kick that beat, please? Oh. Dope. We waiting on reparations. Yeah. All right, let's kick it. Yo, yo, I am dirty and grit, nerdy as shit. Read Hindu scrolls, find words that can flip. It's decadence, even put a bird on a spit. Tell me that my rhyme book is like the worth of a brick. Drink drugs out of golden chalice. Give me hugs because they know my talent. Treat me like slug because I know my balance. Pothead with some bud and a soda gallon. Life's bad calls, only know if you throw a challenge. Rappers faking it, acting like it's the truth. I'ma go and show you who's illest up in the booth. Acting like a menace, I'm dentist, I take a tooth. Knock it out the park, I'm a bigger babe than the roof. Oh, dope, 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 dope. Alright, alright, my name is Dope Knife, and you are listening to Waiting on Reparations. See y'all next week.
Waiting on Reparations is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.